If you are
not Indiana or Muncie or the Unitarian Universalist Church of Muncie or my family or your family or all the children of the world, love them all as we do. Why Earth First? Because, as Thomas Berry concluded in his 1988 book, The Dream of the Earth, we humans must learn to live in a mutually enhancing relationship with nature, or we will perish by our own foolishness. You can list all the issues we care about: the economy, health care, the Muncie schools, the opioid epidemic, racism, climate change, the criminal justice system, living wages, famine, wars, refugees, factory farms, debt, waste, narcissistic and impulsive political leaders, just to name a few. Now, how can we survive this raging storm of complex and difficult issues? Let me say it again. Earth first. The earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. And although Chief Seattle probably did not say these words, they're still true. Indigenous people know it. Science knows it. All major religions know it. And everyone in this room knows the truth of these words when we stop and think about them. The air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat, the beauty we enjoy, all come from Earth. There is no survival, there is no economy on a dead Earth. Earth Day comes round every year to remind us again and again and again that we humans belong to Earth, that we are commissioned to do no harm, to share the abundance, to live in harmony with all species, and to celebrate the wonder of the entire web of life. To forget our place and purpose is to bring upon ourselves a truckload of troubles, like a destabilized climate, for one thing. An article appeared in last Sunday's Indianapolis Star saying, climate change is making us sick. From increases in deadly diseases to choking air pollution and onslaughts of violent weather, man-made climate is making Americans sicker, according to a report released by 11 of the nation's top medical societies representing more than 400,000 doctors. Add to climate change depleted topsoil, health pandemics, species extinction, crushing poverty, and unending violence. Earth Day, if we let it, can bring us back to a mutually enhancing relationship with nature. About now, you are probably thinking that this all sounds fine in principle, but what are the practices? What can I do? What can this church do? What can Muncie do differently? Okay, let me share a few ideas. First, celebrate what you are already doing. Do you recycle? Do you drive a gas-efficient car, ride a bicycle, eat a plant-based diet, install solar panels? Speak out, tell your government officials what you think, run for office. Celebrate by telling everyone who asked, why do you do what you do and what are the benefits? Watching you, they may find a new affection that transforms their fear into courage. Second, celebrate what other Hoosiers are already doing. You can tell I like to celebrate. For the past 10 years, I've led a collaborative effort to discover and document Hoosier solutions to the climate crisis. 200 of these role models were celebrated as green lights and inducted into the Bicentennial Green Legacy Hall of Fame. These green lights actually transformed my life. When I met them and heard their stories, my hope was revived. My thoughts of retiring went away. After all, I'm only 84. But many of their stories are included in this little book. It's entitled Explore Sustainable Indiana. Now, I brought 20 of these books with me today. I'm going to make you a deal. If you just want a copy to take home and put on your bookshelf, the cost is $10. If you promise to read the book and drop me a note or send an email telling me at least one new affection you experienced while reading it, the cost is $1. Or if you know a green light in Delaware County that is not included in this book, and especially in the Hall of Fame in the end, and you send me a brief explanation of one that you know about and give me some contact information, the book is free. And I'll even throw in a CD of 16 Hoosier singer-songwriters who made a bicentennial CD called The Sustainable Songs of Indiana. That'll be back on the table when you're ready. I hope all these 20 books disappear and I don't need a dime, because that means you're going to take them seriously. All right, third, keep a list of everything that gives you hope. Personally, I find immense hope in how children and youth are working with mayors and city councils to pass climate recovery resolutions, and working with school boards to get styrofoam trays out of their school cafeterias. These are kids doing this. Also, I find hope in attending rallies like the Climate March in Indianapolis yesterday, where a diverse, intergenerational, and determined crowd heard inspiring speakers and chanted, "We will win! Stand up! Stand up!" A lot of people are so discouraged and so worried that these words coming from the 500 or 1,000 people, Wayne and I are discussing that, they're amazing. They're very hopeful. And people who have been suffering silently are now taking to the streets for the first time and speaking out for inclusive, fair, and compassionate policies. They are saying no to walls and malls, drones and thrones, waste and mace, lying and dying, and a big no to the rule of gold. But I hear them saying a big yes to the golden rule. Yes to compassion and cooperation. Yes to green jobs and clean air. Yes to local food and safe water. Yes to equal justice and universal human rights. Yes to bees and trees, and yes to a livable planet for all species. Somehow, they found the courage and the commitment in this new affection that gives me hope. Fourth, never doubt that what you say or do makes a difference. Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything, referring to climate change, has inspired banners and placards which read, "To change everything requires everybody." Suppose your sense of urgency to preserve the planet makes you eager to get more people aware and involved. I have learned that passing on my anxiety about how close we are to a dystopian future usually doesn't work. Neither do rational arguments or fearful facts. Now, facts do matter, of course, but expressing our own affection for Earth, walking the talk, and helping others find their own point of affection seems to work better. A year ago, when my grandson was a senior in high school, a fun-loving, devoted athlete, and mostly oblivious, I thought, to anything serious, surprised me saying, "Grandpa, I wrote a paper last week on climate change. My teacher liked it. Would you like to read it?" It also helps to take care of ourselves, to find pleasure in the company of good friends, to find something to laugh about. I have a friend in San Francisco that sends out occasional tidbits of humor to brighten the day. Here is an example. You have to be a little bit old to appreciate this. I see a few gray heads in this. "Growing old has its benefits. You always dwell in the eternal now. Because you can't count on tomorrow and you can't remember yesterday." Okay, finally, Earth First. Earth First is not a spectator sport. It always involves action and sometimes difficult choices. Should I play it safe or risk rejection by speaking up? Should I push myself to eat less meat when I learn it will lower my carbon footprint? Can I really live with less water and less waste? Do I have time to take a walk outdoors? Well, the last sentence of the Earth Charter is both a call to action and a prayer of hope. It serves as a summation of our affections and a projection of our legacy. Please say it with me. Is it up there? Okay, Rick. See it? All right. "Let ours be a time remembered for the awakening of a new reverence for life, the firm resolve to achieve sustainability, the quickening of the struggle for justice and peace, and the joyful celebration of life."